Hello and welcome to The Short Squeeze, a podcast about what's happening in financial markets in the coming week. I'm Alex Druce, editor of Markets Live, a daily live blog on the Sydney Morning Herald and The Age websites. I'm standing in for Lucy Battersby. This week we'll look at the winners of the financial year and the road ahead for equities. We'll discuss how markets might handle a winding back of stimulus measures. We'll look ahead to mortgage lending data and also the RBA's latest rates decision. Today, I'm joined by IG Markets analyst, Kyle Rotter. G'day, Kyle.
Good morning.
This week, I would love to look at the issue of stimulus and particularly the huge amount of stimulus that the government and central bank have provided the nation during this time of coronavirus, what that's meant for local markets and what might happen or what could happen and how it could look when that stimulus is eventually wound back. Now, we've rallied quite strongly over the past 3 months on the back of billions and billions of dollars worth of support measures, I think 35% from that March low. We know that's going to be withdrawn at some point, but it feels like that withdrawal is looming as one of the big risk events or big factors going forward as to how the market will perform. What's your take on it, Kyle?
Yeah, well, I suppose it has local and international implications too. And you sort of look at it from both the fiscal and monetary perspective, and it's the classic issue in economic policy, I think, is that it's probably easy to turn on the taps, but it's a lot harder to turn them off without causing a high degree of disruption. So, the RBA has probably stepped back a little bit with how it's assertive it's been with its policy. It's sort of slowed its asset purchasing program. It's sort of said that it'll keep setting steady and sort of push back on the fiscal question, which is probably the bigger issue in Australia at the moment, because we've obviously got that, so-called fiscal cliff coming in September, where all the payments to households and to businesses and all the other forms of support start to roll off, potentially roll off, without too much insight from the government yet on what they plan to replace it with or what they plan to do after that. Probably even more importantly is that you've got the US situation as well. There's still a lot of question marks around what the US government is going to do to try and stimulate its economy, especially heading into the election and the back end of this year at the very least. And then I'd probably argue the biggest question of all is what the Fed's going to do and how the market's going to handle that. Perhaps just quietly and discreetly over the last couple of weeks, and it's starting to be reported in the media that the Fed is actually unwinding its balance sheet, or at least offloading some of the assets and FX swaps and all the other sort of mechanisms that are put in place to try and stimulate and support global markets throughout the crisis. So we're starting even now, entering that interesting sort of flashpoint where policymakers are trying to build that off-ramp. But as we've learned in the past, it's a very, very difficult thing to do. And, one day all of a sudden you can just see a big spike in volatility and ask why, and you go, liquidity has really dried up, financial conditions have really dried up because support's been pulled out. So we're very quickly heading to that crossroad, I think.
A couple of weeks ago, I heard a really interesting term, the taper tantrum. I was wondering if you could talk to us a little bit about what that meant. I believe it's in reference to a US trend from a couple of years ago. Are there any parallels between that and what we could see here now?
I think almost like it's just sort of saying before with a previous question there, is it sort of centers around the Fed's balance sheet and how the market's going to adjust to a shrinking balance sheet. So the taper tantrum refers to back in, 2014, maybe 2013, when Ben Bernanke flagged and into that round of QE, and that effectively the Fed would start to look at offloading its balance sheet to try and normalize the Fed's balance sheet and bring back financial conditions to something that might be considered a little bit more stable. That might have been the argument at the time. We've seen since March a massive and extraordinary expansion of the Fed's balance sheet. QE is obviously different asset purchasing programs from the Fed. Isn't a new phenomenon by any means. Even last year, the Fed was slowly expanding its balance sheet, and it got to the point where it was sort of holding $3.5-4 trillion worth of financial assets. Well, throughout this crisis, through different forms of policy and asset purchasing programs, and again, FX swaps that the Fed opened up to foreign central banks to provide dollar liquidity, the Fed's balance sheet went from around $4 trillion before the crisis to where it is now at about $6.5 trillion US dollars. And effectively, we are starting to see the Fed trying to taper off some of those purchases. So it's reduced its holdings of mortgage-backed securities, again, FX swaps, other assets that it's purchased, it's trying to sell back to the market. The concern is a little bit like with the taper tantrum, which really disrupted markets back in 2014 or the early part or the mid part of last decade. So maybe this could be something of a disruption to the market if they withdraw that support from the market too quickly, and that could be, raise a real high risk of a volatility event, considering you could probably argue that financial assets and particularly stock prices and everything like that have been kept pretty elevated by this accommodative policy and this expansion of the balance sheet.
Thanks, Kyle. We've just had the end of the financial year last week, where we took a look at some of the stocks, some of the companies that did quite well over the preceding 12 months. And there are a lot of tech names in there. There are a lot of health names in amongst the best performers. The coronavirus has really shaken things up. How society operates, how we do business, working from home. Is that, Kyle, would you say why those particular sectors did so well, especially in the second half of the financial year?
I definitely think that's a large part of the case. Obviously, we've got a really, just if we talk about the ASX 200, a very large exposure to biotech in terms of at least some of the larger companies on the market, in the market. So you look at, your CSLs and to a lesser extent Cochlear's. But obviously, the real beneficiaries from this sort of big seismic event in the global economy, and this goes throughout global equity markets, has obviously been the tech space, which has, almost been, given a bit of a boost, or it's this crisis has been something or somewhat advantageous to those particular companies. So, it wasn't, I guess, a new phenomenon by any means. We've seen, if you look at sort of a factor investing kind of outlook, growth has outperformed value for a long time, and arguably this is only just, I suppose, compounded or exaggerated that particular dynamic. But especially for the ASX 200, as it compares to other indexes across the world, is that it has from a weighted perspective, it has a very low weighting in terms of growth v value, and it's one probably dynamic why the ASX 200's at stages underperformed, especially throughout the month of June, compared to some other global equity gauges, is that we have some really big, really successful growth stocks, but they're very small compared to the value component of the market. So it creates a very interesting dichotomy. But it does look like it's a dynamic with policymaker intervention and some of the themes that are coming out of the market because of this COVID-19 crisis, that kind of growth v value, at the very least, our performance is set to continue, if not even accelerate.
Well, that was my next question. In terms of the next financial year, can we expect to see these trends continue? Can we expect to see, say, the likes of Afterpay, which I think rose 150% last financial year or thereabouts? Can we expect those companies to continue their march forward?
Yeah, well, I mean, my personal perspective is that it'll continue to largely be the case. I mean, I was having a look at a little bit of data across the weekend on Bloomberg about just the relative performance in growth names over value parts of the market itself. And the outperformance is actually as extreme as it's been at any stage in the last 5 to 10 years, and only continues to, like I said before, kind of accelerate. And I think it's a fascinating point because, particularly in May, and this is when the ASX 200 really started to pick up a little bit, again, in comparison to comparable global stock indices, is that we saw that kind of holy cow, value starting to pick up again. There's an appeal in value stocks. Maybe this kind of long-awaited rotation back into value from growth is going to be underway, and that's, for some reason, the COVID-19 crisis might have brought that about. I tend to sort of disagree on the basis that although this COVID-19 crisis has been obviously a monumental event, I don't think it's necessarily actually changed or reversed sort of the trend towards investors flocking to growth stocks as sort of their only opportunities for really solid returns. In fact, I think it's probably just exaggerated it, turned it up to 11, so to speak. So you look at the macro environment and some of the themes in the market that investors are following. Rates are still very, very low. And then out into the future, the only, for now, it would seem viable place to find returns is in growth names, especially ones that seem to benefit from this environment, like the IT and healthcare stocks. You know, although things are very stretched to the upside now, when you look at the comparison in terms of growth over value, all the sort of chips line up to suggest that maybe this theme could persist at least into the next financial year and maybe beyond.
Thanks, Kyle.
IG is a world-leading online trading provider, giving traders access to over 16,000 global financial markets on our award-winning platforms. With over 45 years of experience, you can trade with confidence when with IG. Visit ig.com.au for more information. All trading involves risks. Issued by IG Markets Limited, AFSL 220440.
Welcome back. So, Kyle, this week we've got the RBA board meeting. I don't think rates are expected to shift from their current record low, but what else should we be looking for at the conclusion of Tuesday's meeting?
Yeah, so no change in policy, I think. It's sort of become somewhat of a frustrating issue, I think, for some people in the market that the RBA has really held quite steady on its policy and its rhetoric, more or less saying that policy settings are sufficient to be able to support the economy and support the vulnerable areas of the economy through this crisis. But for the time being, things are steady as she goes and they'll see how things sort of play out from here before looking any further to doing more assertive or creating more assertive policy. So, I mean, the market's not pricing any change to interest rates. The yield curve control program will largely stay the same. They'll probably provide a little bit of forward guidance. I think, almost going back to our first topic of conversation, the interesting point, I think, will be looking at the commentary out of this particular meeting and trying to find what the RBA says about the necessary fiscal response and almost pushing back the onus onto the fiscal side and onto government to try and support the economy through this crisis. Unlike other sort of global central banks, I think the RBA's looked at itself more as just to trying to find provide a base and general policy support to the economy and sort of encouraging government to pick up the rest and really drive the economic recovery over the sort of medium to longer term. So, given this fiscal cliff seems to be rapidly approaching, we're only a couple of months away from September, I'd love to see, and I'm looking forward to seeing what the RBA sort of subtly, you have to read between the lines with these sorts of things, but what they subtly say about what's needed next from a fiscal perspective to make sure that the Aussie economy can at least continue to grind its way into some kind of recovery into the future.
We've got a fairly quiet week on the data front, really, after what was chockers last week. Mm. We've got mortgage lending figures, though, I think on Thursday, which are expected to show a further decline in May. What do you think is driving this at the moment? I mean, it's probably fairly obvious with the coronavirus, but what other factors are at play in weighing on personal finance, mortgage finance, business lending?
Yeah, I think a lot of it's a matter of animal spirits. And, obviously the old Keynesian concept that what really drives activity in the economy, especially from business, but consumers are the same, is the confidence that there is growth to be found and opportunity to be found in the economy in the future. And we've seen, business credit really take a tumble. Over the last couple of months, we saw it spike initially once the crisis hit as businesses kind of tried to, shore up their working capital to cope with the crisis itself. But business lending has certainly fallen off over the last couple of months. In terms of households or mortgage lending, it's the same thing too. I think last month we saw a 5% contraction in mortgage loans. It looks like we might see something similar this month, and it's the same thing. And it goes back to almost, I guess, to tie it in with the theme that we're speaking about today, is this, next stage of the economic recovery. What role is government going to play here in terms of fiscal support? Because, I know right now, households, businesses, in particular, but households too, are looking beyond that sort of September time horizon and going, well, I can't feel any level of confidence about the future to justify borrowing at a time where households, it might be, are already highly leveraged. So I think that's what we're really going to have to try and determine with this number, is it's going to be somewhat of an indicator of sentiment in the economy. And obviously the RBA is going to want to see a pickup in credit growth and lending to sort of use as both a signal of a looming economic recovery, that there is a turnaround in just kind of the animal spirits. But also obviously too, that there's been, you know, sort of a from a backward looking perspective on things, a true improvement in economic conditions. So like you said, it's a quiet week on the data front, but that'll provide a little bit of an insight into, you know, how we're going out of this recovery, and then also how, you know, households are feeling about what is still a reasonably uncertain future.
Thanks, Kyle. This has been The Short Squeeze, a podcast produced by The Age and Sydney Morning Herald in conjunction with IG Markets. You can follow daily stock market news on our live blog, and feel free to subscribe to this podcast via your podcast platform. You can catch us again next week.